Thank you for joining us on this episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett, where we examine current and emerging technologies through the lens of diversity and equality.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Eminent Teachnology with Dr. Rochelle Newton and Drew Stennett. Today, we have an interesting topic. We're going to talk about psychological safety, which, Rochelle, when you sent me these articles, I had absolutely no idea what it was. And after reading those articles, I feel like I know a little bit about it, but that's something that I'm excited to talk with you about, like pretty much all of our other topics. Do you want to talk a little bit as to what psychological safety is?
Sure. So, you know, it's just the history of what we now know formally as work. Employees have always been at odds with their employer, right? Mm-hmm. So there's been a constant ebb and flow of resources to and from each side. And so when you look at the history of work and the policies and laws that go in effect that govern how we work, much of it has been hard fought battles, right? So, you know, we got now, you know, you only work 8 hours a day versus working some unscrupulous number of hours. You have a lunch mm-hmm. break. In some cases you have breaks, you know, like during out the day, you have sick and vacation time and all these other things, which have been battles for each one because some person thought that you didn't need them and some person thought that you did. So it's always been a kind of battle as to what rights you as a worker has. Yeah. And so following that, you know, there is the, you know, contract that we all sign, right? So, and we don't sign it literally, but you apply for a job and let's just say you get the job. Most job descriptions include a little clause that says, and whatever duties as assigned or whatever duties is necessary. Mm-hmm. And literally what that means is your boss or your organization could have you go clean out toilets before your day ended. Now, there's been a lot of, you know, discussion about what that clause means, but it's some expectation that, you know, given that, let's just say your job is stacking boxes, and one day the person who stacks cups calls out sick, your boss could tell you, well, we need these cup stacks, so go over there and stack them. And so the employee is almost always at, and for lack of a better word, the mercy of the employer in terms of what he or she has and cannot do. Yeah. In some instances, your employer could terminate you without cause. And that's mostly in right to work states. And there are majority of our states are right to work, which gives
like 40
the employer
up to 50 or something, right? Like it's a crazy amount.
Right. Right. And so it gives the employer rights. Like, so for, let's just say that the employer can project, you know, 2 years from now, and they'll determine that they don't need this position anymore. If they formulate a way to make that real, they can get rid of that position or they can get rid of that person because that person isn't working right. And typically the employee has the biggest window of success in that first 90 days and failure, I should say. So in the first 90 days, when you get the job, you have a small window to negotiate, right? And most companies have already set their pay, what they're going to pay you for that role. And so most inch toward a little more than a quarter and not over half of what the salary is for that entire role. So let's just say you were the chief bowl stacker or cup stacker and the wage for that was $10 an hour. The maximum wage for that was $10 an hour. And they may decide they're going to pay you $7.50. This allows them to kind of think about hiring other people, you know, to, you know, provide for your benefits and all those things. And all of that said, it's just to kind of give a sense about what benefits are for work and how that works out. Yeah. When you're first hired, you can go, when you get the job, you have the chance to negotiate. And so let's just say they said, we're going to pay you $7.50 an hour. You could say, well, no, I want to make $10. And, you know, it's now a kind of thing of, you know, what you accept, what you won't accept, you know, and if you're in a high demand job, such as yours, Drew, you can almost go in and lay down the flat. I'm only going to accept this amount. If you don't, I'm walking. Yeah. So you have the power at that point as an employee. During that 90-day probationary period, you have more power because now you have the power to shine or to fail, whatever one. So you have a little bit more. So during the 90-day period, they're evaluating you, looking at what you're doing, how you're contributing. And at some point during that process, if you do your job well, if you become valued and you kind of move out of the view of the employer, if you will, as someone they're targeting or focusing on for either disciplinary actions or whatever they may be thinking.
Yeah.
So all of this doctrine of work, as I said earlier, is hard fought, but it's also one of those things that's constantly being evaluated and reassessed. And I'll talk a little bit about diversity. So a few years ago, quite a few years now, the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission was put into effect to ensure employee rights and to protect you from some of the overt things that employers can do. So for example, if you grew up in the workplace in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and even parts of the 80s, maybe even forward to today, but this is what I remember more acutely, that you could be sexually harassed and there's no penalty for it, right? So they may or may not send the person sexual harassment training, but, you know, blatant discrimination, there was no process for that, you know, and even today, it's a he said, she said kind of enterprise, right? So if I go into my boss's office and I say, hey, one of my colleagues made a sexually inappropriate comment, is that a fact or did I make that up? So there's this part where there are laws now to protect employees and give them a little bit more power. But 100% of the time, the power belongs to the employer, not the employee. So except for when you're starting that job and when you're ending that job, that's the only time that an employee kind of has a shift back to that. So a few years ago, and this has been probably, I'd say 10, 15, maybe even 20 years ago, the term psychological safety came into play about work safety, how to feel safe. So, you know, the unions, you know, got together to make sure they were paid correctly and all those things, but companies frown on unions or any kind of organization that lives within its organization that it does not control, right? So the term psychological safety came to make sure that employees felt or had some way to feel like they were valued and that they mattered and they were a part of the ongoing discussion about employee health and employee wellness. So a lot of companies such as ours has a mental health place where you can go and get a few treatments. Many of them offer mental health insurance and stuff like that. So you have those kind of things. But if you have been traumatized at work, literally most times your options are whatever you seek to do, or if your employer has a process, they may or may not acknowledge it and say, yes, we'll do this. So psychological safety is in place or supposedly put in place, and it's subtle because no one has gone on record and put that in as a policy. So we live by the values of psychological safety, or, you know, like EEOC makes, you know, the blatant discrimination almost impossible unless someone is doing it so suddenly you can't tell. But psychological safety is not written as a policy. So the employer says, we are going to make sure that all our employees feel safe in their workspace. So, you know, if you had a boss who was just a needle nose, you know, micromanager, and you felt like this person was always affecting you, and in essence, that affected your work product, how you feel as a person, how you go home. When you go home every day, you're stressed, you're getting into battles with your family. So that's not officially said that we're going to prevent that. But there are some avenues that companies have been moving to. And in light of the diversity and inclusion space, psychological safety has now arose as a thing. Yeah. So in a lot of ways, what we are saying literally is that the employer is going to create a space where you feel safe from psychological, meaning more verbal or, you know, these subtle things like, so, you know, you get a call at 4:55 that says, you know, I need you to stay for a meeting at 5:30, you know, like you already had plans, and all of a sudden you're in this pressure. And if you don't, you feel like, oh my God, if I don't stay, you know, this might not look well, although you're trying to. So they're trying to create this environment where employees feel safe to express their thoughts and ideas. If they see something going wrong, i.e. the whistleblower, you know, they have places to go. But it's, again, I say this emphatically, there's not an official policy. So how do you identify psychologically safe people at workplace? So typically that should be in your human resources department, right? Yeah. But if you think about that, just from the most practical sense, whose interest does the human resources department have? Their employees or the employer?
Yeah, I think so it's the employer 100%, up until the point where 100%. They want to make sure the employees don't sue them.
Right, exactly. And so if the employer, the human resources says, we've had an employee who's come to us and said, you know, these things are happening in his or her department. And so the employer, the person that human resources reports to in that structure, has two obligations, right? I'm serving the employee and I'm serving the employer. Who pays me? The employer. Whose policy is am I admitting? The employer's. Who? Mm-hmm. How am I doing my job? And all of this is from the employer, i.e. HR. And that's why I always say HR is the least transparent part of any organization. It is just, it's not transparent at all. You know, the way we have pay inequity is because of the lack of transparency in human resources. The way we have discrimination is because of the lack of transparency in HR. And so a lot of times the central organization, i.e. the top party organization, tries to distance itself from these things or try to cloak them in ways that make it seem like the employee is the problem and not the company. And so psychological safety is supposed to make sure that an employee knows that there are resources that can help, what to do if you have a problem relationship with a colleague, a manager, or customer, or whatever, all these. So it's about making the employee whole. That's a really slippery thing to do because you've got to weigh competing priorities, right? So I've got my employee who's a good employee. I want to keep them. I want to, you know, them to flourish, grow. But I also have this company that needs to operate. So this employee who's always complaining about his or her colleagues and managers, you know, is she the only person complaining? Is she the only person with the problem? You know, is it just an incompatibility? And so all of these things are supposed to be put in place to secure and make sure people feel valued at work. The problem just is that without a policy that puts teeth into psychological safety, it's just an ad hoc call of what you do about it. But that is really a big thing. And I will tell you, a lot of companies are focusing on psychological safety and how to write policies around it. The problem just is, what is psychological safety?
Yeah.
So what I might consider psychologically safe, you may not. So that's a part of the gray area that exists in psychological safety, i.e. creating policies and practices and behaviors, because it can be arbitrary or it can be nebulous. It can kind of move around, you know, like a jellyfish, something could squish out this place, but, you know, so it's that part. So psychological safety has great potential. It still needs a lot of work.
How do you personally like draw the line between like, because like I see what you're saying now, and that makes a lot of sense. And like thinking back on like past work interactions for me, like I get along with like most people just fine, but there are like a few people that like I just don't get along with. Like we do not work well together. I don't know why, but like, well, maybe I do know why. I feel like we're like totally incompatible, and working with like people like that does like sort of give me stress. And how do you define like, is this just like a personality incompatibility that's like totally cool and maybe y'all just shouldn't work together versus, one of you is being toxic and it actually needs to be worked out like at a higher level?
That's a really great question. You know, the problem just is it's not clear. So you just said that you get along with most people. So the one person or a few people that you may not, is the problem with them or is the problem with you? So, and then how do you express that? Because like a lot of times, we aren't good at communicating what we're experiencing. And the other part is we're not necessarily true about what we experience, i.e. I feel stressed every day. Is that a true statement? I don't know. I may think so, but that might not be a true statement. So if I go into my employer and I say, look, you know, I'm just really not working well with these people and I've tried and they're just not giving me the benefit of the doubt. So you as the listener can do one of two things. You can say, okay, let me get some more data and we'll get back together willingly. Or you could say, you know, this is the third time this week she's been in my office talking about somebody she's working with. I think we may need to pay attention to her actions and do a little bit more. So in a lot of, it could be a matter of incompatibility. It also could be that some of us feel like we are constantly being put upon or attacked, right? And we're constantly, you know, so when we feel that, is the problem ours? Is the problem the employees we work with? Is it the organization? What is it? You know, so in our space, we work in technology. So our jobs are in high demand. We are usually paid fairly well. You know, we are, you know, valued. But the problem is there are some of us that are in that job that do not feel valued, feel like, you know, this is not the right place for me. So for example, if you work in a department, you work in an IT department and there are 20 of you and 19 of you are white and one of you is black, that person is almost always going to feel a little bit out of sorts. So now, how does the company address for psychological safety? the first thing is that's not their priority. The ratio of black to white or male to female or straight to non-straight, that's not their priority. Their priority is to get the work done. They're hoping that people come together and there are personality matches or cliques and things like that, but they also know there are going to be pockets of dissension in the middle of that group too. So how you deal with that mostly is how well you have fine-tune your organization and behavioral cultures, right? So if you know, if you've got employees who feel like every day they're being put upon or they're not, you know, being appreciated, what resources are in place that they can go and tell somebody about this and maybe even have someone analyze what they're describing to find out whether it's a fact? Goes back to our conversation about emotional intelligence. Because just because I believe the word fruit on Fruit Loops is spelled F-R-U-I-T, that might not be how it's spelled. So my opinion of what's happening to me and what's really happened to me may not be the exact same. So there's that. The part of other is too, is does this person, so, you know, so for example, early on in my career, every 2 years I had a new job. I didn't work for anybody more than 2 years, just would not work because that was the way to get paid more, right? Because once you get in a job, you know, you only get 1-5, some little menial percent, but you're not getting a good raise, right? And if you're trying to grow and advance your career, most people want to be paid something so they can support their families and their livelihood. Mm-hmm. That could be looked at one or two ways. So every 2 years, is she being fired? Is she quitting? Why is she doing this? So when I come into the company and they look at my HR file and they say, oh, well, you know, every 2 years she changes jobs. They could be say, well, she could be job shopping or something like that. They could say she's a problem employee or something that may come out not in my favor. So it's a matter of understanding who's telling the story, why, and what is their history.
That's a really good point. I remember early in my career, you know, going back like 20 years, when we would see people with like a big work jump, like lots of jobs, I remember people saying, oh, well, you know, they must like be awful to work with if they're jumping around all the time. And that really made me like, as like, you know, a young professional be like, oh, well, I need to like stay at these places for a long time then. Like if people have a bad opinion of other people jumping around, and I feel like jumping around has gotten a lot more mainstream now. And at least personally, I haven't heard that as a bad thing. It's like, oh yeah, they're going around. They're probably making more money. They're probably doing more things that are interesting to them. Like, and I've even heard like, oh, you know, maybe they'll just be here for 2 years and that's great. We'll get like a great employee for 2 years. And then if they get tired of us after that, fine. Like they can move on. But you know, 2 years nowadays is a pretty good amount of time for somebody to work.
Absolutely. And I think the millennials put that in place that, you know, I don't guarantee I'm going to be here. I'm going to come in with lots of demands. I want to be paid a lot. And if I don't like what you're doing, I'm going to leave. Yeah. And so companies become more accustomed to that turnover process or whatever. But back in the day, as you said, it's absolutely correct. It was considered a negative thing. And that's where that emotional intelligence comes in, because you're making assumption without facts. You don't know why that person is changing jobs every 2 years. But if you're assuming that the person is changing jobs because they're hard to work with, that's not necessarily a fact.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's also good to remember, like, you know, a company that you work for is not like a person. Like they do not have your, I mean, they may want you to be like a happy employee, but they don't have your like long-term goals in mind as like part of their business plan. And, you know, when the times get tough, companies are not going to hesitate to just be like, oh, well, this person, you know, we need to just get rid of them at like the snap of a finger. They're not going to feel bad about it because they're not, you know, they're not in a relationship with you outside of, you know, the business of you do work for them, they pay you, and then rinse and repeat over and over and over. So like, it's hard to, I guess my advice to folks is whenever I hear like, oh, well, but you know, this place has been so good to me over the years. It's like, well, that's great. You've been good to them as well, but you owe them like nothing going forward past your pay cycle. Like, don't feel bad about, you know, loyalty to a thing that's not even a living entity. It's just it's all just a business.
Absolutely. And I think a part of that, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
No. And I agree with you completely. And I think that, you know, it used to be a time. So there was some value in staying at a company for a number of years. Can I put you on a brief thing? My son is calling me. Hold on.
Just no problem.
Sorry about that.
No, no problem at all. Is he doing all right?
Yeah, yeah, he's okay. You need to go back and listen to right before I interrupted. You were talking, it was a brief freeze in it. So listen to that part. So I don't know where we are in this chat, but whatever minute this is or wherever, you might need to look back 2 or 3 minutes and see, because there's a brief little freeze and something you were getting ready to say. It just briefly froze.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was just going to bring up thinking about, like, am I working with someone that's, like, toxic, or am I working with someone that I just, like, that we just don't mesh with, like we just have personality clashes. And a lot of times what I'll try and do is like observe their relationship with other folks. And like, if it seems like I'm the only one that's having a problem with this person, it could be like a Drew problem. It could be that, you know, hey, this person's great. There's just something about our personalities that don't match. And, you know, that's fine. If every person that I talk to is having an awful experience with that person, then, you know, maybe it's that person. But I just think it's always good to just sort of like be aware and always try and be introspective. And like, if you're the person that's having problems with this person and you're the only one, then like, you know, maybe it's something in yourself or in the way that you're interacting with them, and that just doesn't mesh well.
Yeah, you know, I think that it's kind of like dating. I mean, if you remember when you were young, you know, maybe in high school, even middle school, and you started dating, you know, there were a lot of attractive people out there to date. But, you know, once you got to know them, you'd be like, ah, nah, this is not really great for me. It's not. And it might not be anything wrong with either one of you. It just might be that, you know, different ideologies, different mm-hmm. ways of looking at the world and stuff like that. It could be that. I think in the workplace, though, you know, you spend more awake hours at work, especially during the week, than you do anywhere else. Oh, and yeah. Your relationships in work have to work some way that's beneficial for all. If you're in an environment where the person or the environment is toxic, you know, you have to find out what's at the root of it. And like, I think that it's very important that people reach out, you know. So if you're working with an employee that is, you consider toxic, or you just don't get along with them, you know, there is nothing wrong with a email or a text or something. Hey, can we go have a coffee, or can we go have lunch or something like that? And just talking about whatever it is that you need to talk about. So you could talk about like you like the Beatles and the person likes the Rolling Stones. So you could talk about something that's not related to anything that you feel, just to break the ice. You're looking for that icebreaker or that thing where you can start building a common refrain between you. But I think that in the space of psychological safety, one of the things I recommend to everybody I talk to about this is like, you have to feel appreciated where you are. You have to feel valued. If you're in the middle of a team and you're left out, you're not invited to the lunches or the little jokes or beer on the weekend or golf or whatever it is you're doing, that team has not fully accepted you.
Yeah.
If you are in the case that you're Black or brown and you hear those little subtle jokes and everybody starts laughing, and the minute you walk up, they stop laughing, you know, you haven't been accepted to the team. And so you've got to find a way to give everybody their space to be who they are and to accept them as they are. Now, sometimes overt racism or discrimination, you should be up in arms about that all the time. My daughter said something to me just the other day. She was watching, she started out watching the Oscars, because I guess the Oscar buzz said that Chadwick Boseman was going to win an Oscar for best actor or something like that.
Yep.
And she said, I immediately turned away after he did not. And she said, if the programs are not going to show Black people and show Black characters and things that I identify with, I'm not watching it. She said, so, you know, that's something that people need to think about, you know, how do you bring people to appreciate and to value what you value, you know? And that's not to say that anything else doesn't matter, right? So if Anthony Hopkins won the best Oscar award, we love Anthony Hopkins. Silence of the Lambs is still frightening to this day. You know, like nobody wants to watch that in the dark. Great actor. You know, what we are hoping for is some Black acceptance, if you will, that you recognize that this is a great actor. So in the space where you psychologically don't feel like you're safe because of your race, your age, your gender, your sexual orientation, your religion, whatever it is, that's a place that needs to think about its organizational structures and culture, right? So care about your employees and make people feel valued. If you remember some of the things that you did at our space, you would bring people over to talk to us about something. And every once in a while, I just look at the room, look around the room and see I'm the only Black woman in the room. And it's an uncomfortable feeling. It's uncomfortable. It's not that I don't feel safe, because I felt safe. I felt like I was learning. We had a good time. We were always joking and whatever. But it's just at that very moment, for a brief period of time, it's uncomfortable. It's a tad bit stressful. And so when we break down psychological safety and relationships, it's a matter of finding that happy medium between how do I maintain my sanity for this place? I spend more waking hours than I do anywhere else with anyone else than these people. How do I maintain my psychological safety, well-being, stress-free, versus do the work? Because let's just say, you know, you've got a project, and the project is a big project. It's a lot of money, a lot of resources, a lot of demand, prioritization, and all that stuff. And you feel uncomfortable being in your workspace, and you've got the stress of this project. You've got to get it done. You've got to work with a whole bunch of other folks. You need input and feeders. If that environment feels stressful, or I guess unequal, or some term like that, then that psychological safety piece must come first, because it's the same thing with diversity and anything else. In order to have your best from your employees, they must feel safe and valued to do their best. They want to give their best. They want to do everything. So we talked about this briefly before, but you know, everybody was concerned when we went to remote work, right? Mm-hmm. Are people a company's going to get their bang for their buck, you know, because everybody thought employees would go home and watch TV and read books and, you know, take long walks on the beach or something. But we've demonstrated that we work when we are at work, regardless of where we are. So it's that place where you see value in your employees and you trust them to do their job. And if they come to you and say, hey, you know, I'm working with this girl over here, and she's really a mess, you know, and I have really tried, you know me, I'm good, I work well with people, but I'm just not able to do it. Sometimes the impetus is upon the employer to make that right. But sometimes the employee, i.e. you, can make that right, because you could say, hey, here's this girl, and let's just arbitrage, this girl is Rochelle. Hey, Rochelle, I'm going to get a cup of coffee. You want to walk with me? Or I want to talk to you about something. Let's just say the project we're working on. You want to walk with me? And there's a chance you can reshift the energy between that relationship to something that's more positive. Yeah. You know, it doesn't always work. You know, people who are quirky are quirky or quirky. And IT people are really quirky. So I don't want anybody to get this sense that we are just a walk in the park. We are not. We tend to be strange characters. But nonetheless, there is a symmetry that exists between us that allow us to work, because we know how we are. So we expect that other person to have that. But the problem with that expectation is it may not be correct.
That's very profound. And I feel like I have a new to do now, is to start talking to people more that that I won't say don't get along with, but just that don't like totally mesh well. And I feel like maybe that's a good thing to do, instead of just like, I have a bad habit of, you know, people I get along with really well, I'll talk to all the time and it's great. People that I don't get along with, don't talk to them at all. And it's I feel like that's the wrong thing to do. I need to start talking to people that maybe I don't get along with more, and maybe that will like grease the wheels. And that's, I feel like that's a little bit harder when we're working remote, but even working remote, I mean, we've got all this instant messaging. There's not a, like, you can communicate with people all the time, and if they're busy, they don't need to respond. That's okay. You know?
Absolutely. So, and I think that's an important thing to think.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I think that's an important fact. I think that's something people should consider as well.
Yeah.
And we talk about this a lot, about tone and stuff like that. You know, if I send you an email and say, Drew, will you look at this? And that's all I put in a question, send it. You could assume a whole bunch of things about what I just said. Mm-hmm. And it's not, it may or may not, maybe I'm busy. I can't get my whole message out. I can't put in all my pleasantries. Hey, Drew, how are you? What's happening with you this week? I can't put all that in. I just have to... And we may assume about things. So I think that we have to assume grace about things, as opposed to assuming the worst.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. The only other thing I was going to add is, since you mentioned the Oscars, and I always got to talk about movies, that Chadwick Boseman was absolutely robbed in that best actor role. Like you said, Anthony Hopkins, great. We all love him. But like, objectively speaking, Chadwick did like a way better job. Like, he was, have you watched Ma Rainey's Black Bottom? By chance? Oh, it's so
I've read the book.
Nice. Well, he's just like perfect at it. Like, it's a really amazing movie, so I would definitely recommend it. But absolutely, you know, don't want you to be stressed out by watching it as well, but it's really good.
Absolutely. I think the other part of psychological safety too is employers need to think long and hard about putting in policies and practices in place to help employees understand what psychological safeties are. You know, one of the things that I always recommend people do is place your raise. People always say, why would you do that? Or what's the other thing where you run around the room and try to get in the chair before somebody else gets in the chair?
Musical chairs. I don't
know what that's called. Musical chairs. So, you know, these things where you allow a situation to develop organically, right? Yeah. So charades. So someone is doing a charade or some kind of thing like that. And you say, oh, I think that's, you know, a rabbit crossing the street, where in fact, it's a turtle climbing a tree.
Yeah.
So, but the way the person perceives what's happening may or may not be the same. I think escape situations are great things to bring in ways to explain psychological safety and make people feel good. So I know there's a running joke on a lot of the comedy shows about, you know, somebody says, oh, catch me if I fall backwards and there's no one there. That's an example of that psychological safety thing. So I'm counting on you to be there for me. I'm counting on you to support me. And whether it's an employee, a colleague, a friend, whatever, I'm counting on you to support me. And if you aren't there to catch me when I fall, again, you assume grace. The person was scratching their nose or got a phone call or something. There's some reason why they didn't catch you. Mm-hmm. And you may give the person a second chance to catch you. If they keep missing you, there's something in that. You need to figure out what that is, but there's something in that. So to me, in a lot of ways, psychological safety is about the relationships you make with each other in the workplace and the relationships we have out of work, you know, when we're going out, dating, whatever it is. It's that place where I feel safe. I can tell you anything. So if I tell you, Drew, I washed my hair this morning and I didn't feel like combing it. Mm-hmm. So it looks like I have a very low afro right now. I feel safe telling you that and without you judging me or making any kind of upset. So can we have a relationship where I can tell you something about me that may be uncomfortable for me or something I maybe just need to share or something and you not judge me or that I feel accepted even with that. So even with my short afro, you still love me.
Oh yeah, I thought your hair looked really good today. I think it looks nice every time we talk, pretty much. how do you like put that?
That's that husband part you can't say.
how do we like? So I understand what you're saying about the building trust and sort of like the, and even like just bonding with your coworkers. And how does that really come into play, like from a policy perspective? Like, can a company say like, hey, y'all got to all go bond together sometime, you know, like how does the policy part of that come into play?
So I think that a lot of times companies do it and it happens more organically. So if you take Duke, I think a lot of the relationships we forged, they're organic relationships. Duke had nothing mm-hmm. to do with them. We forged them on our own. But then a lot of them are, you know, you and say 5 or 6 people are working on a project and it's 11:30 and your stomach is growling. And all of a sudden you say, oh, I'm hungry. Anybody want to go grab a bite to eat? And that's one of those things. What the company or the organization needs to do is allow for that. You know, so if you have a 30-minute or hour lunch hour and you stay 15 minutes or 30 minutes, whatever it is, that the company knows they're going to get that 30 minutes back and they're not looking at, oh my God, you were gone an hour and 30 minutes. They know they're going to get that back. So that's one of the things, is allowing time for things like that. Conferences, allowing employees to go to conferences and groups or together so that they can, you know, kind of share knowledge and all those things. I think another good example of that is companies writing policies that, you know, takes time to assess employee wellness, right? So, you know, maybe quarterly an employer will send out a survey and ask 10 questions, you know, so how many days this week did you work more than 40 hours? That's a really good question of employee wellness. How many days this week do you feel like you accomplished what you said about accomplishing? You know, how many times this week did you read a book that's not related to what your job is? You know, these things where they allow and collect data from employees to find out how they're doing and they don't penalize the employee for saying that. So a lot of times that's done anonymously, right? You could do an anonymous survey and you don't have to know who it is, but be upfront about allowing employees to voice their concerns and then creating practices that allow those voices to then have value.
Yeah, that's great. Like, I don't think I've ever had an employer that has asked those things, like, ever. And I think it would be super useful to both the employees, just sort of like as an introspective thing, and the employer to see, because I don't think any employer wants their employees like working, you know, 80 hours a week and not feeling productive. Like, that seems awful all around, but I think a lot of people also just don't ask. They don't know because they don't ask.
Absolutely.
Well, this was great, Rochelle. As always, I feel like I learned way more than I was expecting to, and my like bar for what I'm going to expect keeps raising higher and higher. So thank you.
I like that. And, you know, I think that, you know, we should come back and revisit this topic again, because I think there's more to be said here. I think also there is more to be said about that emotional intelligence, because I do think psychological safety and emotional intelligence crosses nicely into each other's discipline and kind of expands the discipline together. Because again, I go back and I say what we talked about a time or two ago, you know, what we assume to be facts may not be facts. It may not be what we think it is. If we believe we have a terrible boss, do we? You know, or is that something we have assumed because our few interactions with that person may not, we've had a few interactions that may not have gone well. Yeah. Maybe that person is, they were having a bad day. They're being pressure put on from them above, you know, they're, you know, whatever it is, but a lot of what you may be seeing may not be a bad boss or a bad environment or a bad colleague. It might just be the environment in which you work.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I absolutely agree. I also think, like a lot of the stuff that you see between like your relationship and your boss, it could a lot of times be like the tip of the iceberg for what your boss is right. doing either like for or against you. Like there's a big old curtain
yes.
and like you see that little bit that peeks out, but there's a ton that's hidden.
Thank you for listening to Eminent Teachnology. If you like the show, please review, subscribe, and recommend us to your friends and family. We'd love to hear feedback from you as well. You can email us at eminentteachnology@gmail.com. See y'all soon.